Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
Live on. Yes, yes, yes. Hello, people. Hello on a fine spring Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you know what time it is. It's FSB Crew Showtime. I am your host, JT, a.k.a. The Master, and I'm always joined by my co-host, fellow Jersey guy, be J&J, be Jerry and Jeff, the Joker from Jersey, is my co-host for tonight. And we're going to engage in some conversation and give you information about the crazy world. And it's going to be we're going to be talking about some crazy world of fantasy, sports, and maybe not so much politics. Just will go around. But we've got a great show in store for you tonight. We're going to be talking. We're probably going to run the gamut: football, basketball, baseball. I don't even know where to start. I know the NBA playoffs are in hand right now. I know that NBA player is dazed and confused, and it's got to be something like this. For those who don't know, that is the theme song from the Game of Thrones. Stop it. It won't stop for me. That's from the Game of Thrones. And there's a lot of power struggles going on in basketball, in baseball, and in football. But let's go off this route first. I want to bring in my co-host because I'm all over the map trying to get my thoughts together, and Jeff is going to help me get me rounded and bring me in here. I don't know, Jeff, how you doing, man?
Hey, Jerry. Hey, what's up?
Oh, man, I'm pumped. You can see I'm pumped. A lot of things have been going on last week. A lot of things have been going on, good and bad. How was your week, by the way?
Okay.
Good. Well, right off the bat, you know, I want to go this way. I know everybody wants to talk about maybe the playoffs or the NFL schedule coming out, but we are going to do something different here. We got a whole hour show, so I want to cover this first. Now, Jeff, you happen to be a Yankees fan, and I'm not bashing on the Yankees because I'm a Met fan, but Michael Panetta, for those who don't know baseball or not familiar with what Michael Panetta is, he happens to be a pitcher for the New York Yankees. This is his first year with the Yankees, okay? I think about a week ago, give or take, when he played against the Boston Red Sox, if I'm not mistaken, and it was in, I think it was in Yankee Stadium at the time. He was standing on the mound, and the camera happened to catch a nice brown spot, and it wasn't because he was wiping his butt. It is a nice brown spot, and it wasn't because he spit on it and rubbed it in the dirt. A nice brown spot on his right hand, which he throws, and that's what he uses to pitch. It happens to be, and he didn't deny it, happens to be pine tar. So it's commonplace, let me put it this way. Supposedly it's commonplace that pitchers put pine tar on their hands or something like that, or maybe on their belt put pine tar and rub it to get a better grip to throw the baseball and have better control over it. And the ump didn't say anything about it. I think it was mentioned, but the Yankee manager, the Yankee organization kind of blew it off, and so did basically the Red Sox blew it off because, you know, it's pretty much it's banned, but it's commonplace. Let me put it that way. Well, in his infinite wisdom, Michael Pineda last night decides to take it one step further. Instead of having it on his hand, he decided to be bold and beautiful and put it right on his neck, on his right neck. So all he had to do was reach up with his right hand, stroke his neck right under his right ear, and there's a big glob of pine tar. Now, come on. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that. And they happen to be playing the same team, they're playing the Boston Red Sox. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that the manager and all the fans, because I think they're playing in Fenway, all the fans saying, you know, come on. You can't be that obvious with it and expect us not to say anything. So what happens? Manager says something to the home plate umpire. Home plate umpire and a couple of Yankees, including the catcher, walk out to the mound. The umpire looks at his right side of his neck, feels it with his finger, looks at him and says, "You're out of here." Now, I don't know what he was thinking and why he thought he could get away with it. And it makes no sense to me, but for his reward, Michael Pineda, you now have a 10-game suspension. Jeff, as a Yankee fan, as you hearing about this story last week and now again with him this week, talk to me. Give me your thoughts on Mr. Michael Pineda.
You know, I think, you know, this just is one of these hot-button topics, and it's cheating. And, you know, there's laws and there's rules. And about, you know, the pine tar, that's a rule. That's not a law.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this has just been going on in baseball forever.
Right.
And, you know, in baseball, there's the hitters and there's the pitchers. And it's kind of like in football. You got offense, you got defense. And a lot of times, pitchers stick together, hitters stick together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's sometimes on a baseball team, you know, pitchers hang around with the other pitchers, the hitters hang around with the other hitters, and there's a lot of contempt and back and forth and whatever. And there's a lot of gamesmanship on both sides. And, you know, you hear the rationale. And the thing is, the game has kind of gone back to the pitchers a little since they, you know, started checking more for steroids and whatnot. You know, the pitchers usually, you know, they used to rationalize it like saying, oh, well, almost all the rule changes are to help the hitters. And now, you know, the strike zone is so small, you know, these pitchers, you know, they're looking for an advantage or whatever. And the hitters cheat, too. You know, I mean, it doesn't bother me that much. It, as long as it's, you know, like certain things, like if somebody, like, you know what cracked me up? Like, I think it was last year, somebody got pissed off because they thought the other team was stealing the signs. And as far as
right.
that goes, as long as you're not using electronics to steal signs, that's allowable. That's why you're supposed to disguise your signs. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
And this gets to the root of what one of the things I hate about baseball is all these ridiculous unwritten rules, because it's like some of these bozos keep making up new ones every day, you know?
Yep.
I don't like – I know they exist sometimes, but overall, I don't like unwritten rules in life and baseball and anything. You know, and it's just – it's part of baseball. It doesn't bother me. I mean, when I was a kid, there was Gaylord Perry, you know. He was notorious for putting God knows what on the ball, you know. And there's probably a lot of substances you could put on the ball. I mean, the thing is, you kind of it's tough because they've always got a camera on these guys. How to disguise it, you know. But there's, you know, the hitters cheat too. I think the last one to get busted was Sosa. And it wasn't for the PEDs, which he never got busted for. It was for using a corked bat.
Yep.
And, you know, they Greg Nettles once, he had a bat break, and all the Super Balls came out of it. yeah.
Yep.
People don't forget about stuff like that. And
How about Phil Niekro and Whitey Ford, who both of them doctored up the board. Whitey Ford even admitted that he doctored up the ball. So
I mean,
and both those guys are in the Hall of Fame.
A knuckleball guy, a lot of times, they don't have to put all that stuff on a ball. I like knuckleball pitchers because, you know, like Niekro, they could throw a lot of innings. And, you know, it's not only hard to hit, it's hard to catch, it's even hard to field at times.
Right.
And Niekro was great at that. And I remember, this will never happen again. When I was a kid one year, late 70s, he was with Atlanta. Atlanta stunk. He was their only good pitcher. They still had a four-man rotation, so he came. He started every fourth day. And even if there was a rainout or something, someone else would get bumped because he was their only good pitcher, pretty much. They were a last-place team. And he had both 20 wins and 20 losses that season. That's never going to happen again.
No, you're right.
And he finished games. And, I mean, I know there's still a few of these guys in the big leagues, but considering you're looking now, all these Tommy John surgeries and whatnot, I swear, if I had a team, I would be encouraging scouts and minor league coaches and whatever to teach the knuckleball. I'm serious. I really would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's a lot less strenuous on your elbow, on your shoulder.
Absolutely.
To throw, so, yep.
I mean, there's knuckleball pitchers. That's their only pitch, you know? I'm serious, because they could do so much with it. You know, I mean, a normal pitcher, you figure they got a fastball, a curve, a changeup, maybe a slider. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess you usually need at least two pitches in the big leagues. But some of these knuckleball guys can do it with just one pitch. It's a great pitch.
Yeah, R.A. Dickey used that one year to get a big, fat contract, and he's not really – he's a little shaky in the American League and a different team. So, but I think he's probably the only knuckleball pitcher that I can think of that's in the major leagues right now.
There's not many. Oh, what was that guy, Wetland? Did he retire?
Who's that?
I think his name was Wetland, I think. I can't remember the guy's name.
You're not talking about John Wetland, no.
Yeah, I thought he was. Was he a knuckleballer?
No, I thought he was. I thought he was a hard. Wetland.
I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure his name gets rid of W. I'm going to look it up. There was a knuckleballer pretty recently. I'm going to look that up while I'm talking. But like I said, they really should encourage that pitch.
Yeah, I mean, you know. So I'm going to see what happens when Mr. Pineda comes back.
Tim Wakefield.
That's
his name.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
see when Mr. Pineda comes back and sees see how effective he is, and see if he still decides to use that pine tar somewhere. I don't know, man. You know, you can't be too bright to do that, but it is what it is. I want to talk about another New York guy, but a different sport. I want to talk about Mr. Carmelo Anthony. The season's over. The Knicks aren't into the playoffs. Phil Jackson just recently had a press conference, and he basically said that apparently Carmelo had made a comment about taking less money. And Phil Jackson said, I hope he stays true to his word at the press conference. But he also said that if Carmelo stays with the team, we'll move on, and that's a good thing. But if Carmelo decides to opt out and move on to another team, that's a good thing also. and we'll move on. Also, we'll move on without him. So he basically said, one way or the other, we're moving on. And in my opinion, and I may have taken this wrong, he pretty much said, I don't care if you stay or go, because we're going to move on without one way or the other. And I basically said, I don't give a damn if you stay or go, because what we're going to do is move on. And with that being said, there was a report in the, I think it was the Daily News or one of the New York newspapers, that said that there was already friction between James Dolan and Phil Jackson, because Phil Jackson wanted to get rid of a few people from the old regime, from the old organization, and he wanted to completely clean house and bring his own people. And then James Dolan supposedly stepped in and said, no, you're not, these people are staying. You can do what you want, but these people are staying because I want them to stay. So, but Phil Jackson said that James Dolan, in a press conference, that James Dolan has stayed true to his word. So you don't know whether to believe Phil Jackson is what he says, or the newspaper article that claimed that James Dolan hasn't fully relinquished total control of the organization to Phil Jackson and still is not willing to give up what Phil Jackson wants, and that's total control. Jeff, you can pick whether you want to talk about Carmelo. And the reason I'm saying this is because Carmelo got some advice, or Oscar Robertson, Hall of Famer, had said that that he should leave the Knicks and join the Rockets. Now, I'm going to give you a choice, but you got to cover both of them. You can start either with Oscar Robertson and Carmelo Anthony, or Phil Jackson and James Dolan. Go ahead.
You know, I don't even know where to begin, but, you know, how did this come up with Oscar Robertson? You know, I guess he was interviewed recently. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, he's one of the all-time greats.
Absolutely.
And I think he retired in the 70s. That's how long ago he played. But no exaggeration, mm-hmm. all-time great. And I think he spent a lot of his career in out of the limelight, playing in Cincinnati, but then he finished up in Milwaukee and was able to get a championship with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Well, then he was Lou Alcindor, I think, playing center. And, you know, Robertson is very well respected. You know, I'm just curious how this came up. I mean, you know, some of these guys, a lot of players aren't big on history. A lot of these players aren't fans. I mean, Carmelo might barely know who Oscar Robertson is, you know. And I don't want to single out Carmelo, but it's very common. These guys, a lot of these guys are young and they don't know the history. And, you know, the thing is, I don't care for James Dolan. I mean, when you bring in, you know, anyone to be president, you expect they're going to bring in a lot of their people. This should have been hashed out during the hiring process. You know, believe me, if I had to pick one, I'd take Phil Jackson over Dolan. But right off the bat, I mean, if they're not getting along, that's not good. And, you know, the Knicks need a coach. I mean, there's a good chance it's going to be Steve Kerr. But, you know, the Knicks have an odd roster. And, you know, it just... when it comes to trading and whatever, I'm conservative. I just can't believe they gave up all that for Melo without being able to lock him up long term, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if they get rid of him, I mean, well, if he leaves, then it's okay. They'll stink this year, but at least it'll free up cap room. And then, you know, next year they could sign a big-name guy or whatever. But it stinks to have to go through that. And it's like one of these guys, it's, you know, I hate to say it, Carmelo, as talented as he is, he's a coach killer. He's, you know what that is, a guy who's...
You think so?
Good enough, I mean, maybe not quite, but, you know, the line of coach killer is a guy who's good enough to play but not good enough to win, you know? And I got to give Carmelo some credit. He is almost always played for winning teams, but never championship teams.
Well, let me give you this comment that comments that Oscar Robertson had, and you can also add to it once I give it to you. And this is a direct quote from Oscar Robertson. Wherever that kid's gone, when he was at Denver, they had a team that fooled around with the ball. Then all of a sudden, when they needed a basket, threw it to Carmelo. Then when he shot the ball, they said he shot too much. Then when he didn't shoot, they said he didn't shoot enough. No matter what he does in New York, they're going to criticize him. The people are going to criticize him because you got guys on the Knicks that just cannot play. So if not New York, let me do this one too. If I were Carmelo, I would say, listen, I'm not going to stay here and take all this gruff and all this criticism. You got guys on the team making $12, $15, $16 million and doing nothing, and here I am averaging 28, 29 points per game. So if not New York, what landing spot did Robertson see fit for Melo? If he goes to Houston, they're going to win everything. This is a crazy quote. And I can't believe Oscar Robertson said this, because Oscar Robertson usually is, I would say he's reserved, but no, I shouldn't say he's reserved, but he does say some crazy things, and this is one. You look at LeBron. LeBron's got a great game. Durant's got a great game. And listen to this last part of this quote. They can't outshoot Carmelo. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm just kind of puzzled. I mean, the thing is, you know, star players like Melo are always going to be criticized. So, you know, they shoot too much, they don't shoot enough. There is a lot of that. And that comes with being a star, you know.
Yep.
The Knicks do not have a well-constructed roster. They don't. I hate to use the term, but they don't have a ton of chemistry. They've had some disappointing guys. I mean, I like Chandler, but he's been a disappointment this season. You know, Amari's been playing with bad knees, which they knew going in he had bad knees. And, you know, he doesn't really play well when he's in there with Melo. You know, it's just weird. And I'll tell you, you know, I don't want to get too far off the topic. I recommend the documentary about the Bad Boys, the Detroit Pistons teams, because, you know, I haven't, you know, seen them play in a long time, of course. That was, you know, over 20 years ago. But that was just a team with a capital T. I think from that group, I mean, they were 10 deep. You know, 10 guys got significant minutes. They had a very deep rotation. All were very good. All were team-oriented. I think there's only one Hall of Famer from that group, which is Isaiah. And I remember back then, I mean, I hated them out of respect, you know, because they didn't just want to beat you. They wanted to beat you badly and rough you up, too, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, like I said, it, and the fact that they were such a tight team on and off the court, it wouldn't have mattered if they didn't have the talent. And I like the part afterwards when, you know, this is stuff you don't hear about. You know, Isaiah said, you know, they were very focused. They had a self-imposed curfew, you know, stuff like that. I give them credit, the ownership credit. They were one of the first teams, maybe the first, to travel by charter, which players say makes a big difference so they don't get hung up waiting for hours for a plane at an airport.
First class.
And that was just incredible team. It wasn't just three superstars and a bunch of role players. And like a lot of the great teams, a lot of those guys have gone on to coaches and front office and maybe some broadcasting. I know Isaiah didn't do too well in that respect, but a lot of the other guys, you know, have done pretty well. And just, you know, and that was the bridge between the Magic Bird era and the Jordan era. That was a very interesting time in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of the NBA, as you well know, the NBA playoffs started the 19th of April. And on that day, there were three games. And out of the four games. And out of the four games that were played, the only team that was the highest seed, won. Brooklyn played Toronto. Toronto was the higher seed. Brooklyn won that game, 94-87. Golden State played the L.A. Clippers. Quite naturally, the Clippers had a better record. They had a higher seed. Golden State beat them, 109-105. Atlanta, the number eight seed against the Indiana, the fragile Indiana Fakers, Pacers, I should say, the number one seed, lost to Atlanta in Indiana, 101-93, and the one that held serve as the higher seed was the Oklahoma City Thunder, who beat the Memphis Grizzlies 100-86. Then we go back to Sunday, where the next set of games, another four games, are played. And on this game, on this day, it was 50-50. San Antonio dispatched Dallas 90-85. Miami dispatched Charlotte 99-88. Chicago struggled and went down in Chicago, surprisingly, against the super quick Washington Wizards, 102-93, and Portland. And I had talked on Sunday, Jeff, that I thought this was going to be the most entertaining game and the most high-scoring game, and I wasn't disappointed because neither one of these teams played defense. They went into overtime, and Portland, the lower seed, pulled it out 122-120 in overtime. Then we go to Monday, and Memphis returned the favor to Oklahoma City Thunder, 111-105 in overtime. The Clippers absolutely demolished the Golden State Warriors by 40, 138-98. Tuesday, Indiana finally decides to wake up and win 101-85 against Atlanta. Toronto decided to wake up 100-95 against Brooklyn. But surprisingly, Chicago, for the second time in a row in Chicago, this time they lose in overtime to Washington, 101-99. And yesterday, Miami ekes out a win over Charlotte, 101-97. Dallas returns the favor to San Antonio and beats them 113-92. And then Portland goes up on Houston. This is a surprise, 112-105 in Houston. And now they're going back to Portland. Jeff, what the hey is going on? We got a 1-1 series, Indiana and Atlanta playing tonight. Oklahoma and Memphis playing tonight. And the Clippers and Golden State playing tonight. And a Houston Rockets team that plays tomorrow that they're in dire need of a win, and they got to play in Portland. Before I go any further, talk to me, Jeff. What do you think, if you have watched the playoffs, or what do you think about what I just laid out there? Talk to me.
You know, I think usually in the NBA, I mean, first round, winning the first round series is almost a given for the higher seeds. But now this year almost looks kind of like the NFL, where there's a history of teams getting hot late in the season. But in the NBA, you know, the better teams are usually they're geared towards the playoffs. You know, they rest their players. They're really they pace themselves, and they're really focused on the playoffs. And you know, Indiana got cold at the wrong time, really cold. And it's going to be, if they lose the first round series to an Atlanta team, that I think is below 500. The East was so bad this year. You know, that's going to be a major embarrassment and a very long off season if the Pacers can't beat Atlanta. And another team that got cold at the wrong time was Golden State. And you know, they're playing the Clippers, and the Clippers are good. Who would have thought the Clippers are significantly better than the Lakers? That's probably the first time. You don't see a lot of Cinderella runs in the NBA playoffs. You know, you just don't for whatever reasons. It's long. It's a four series, and the thing is, frequently, the high seed teams, they sweep the first series, they get a chance to rest, and then the next round, then they're playing somebody coming off of a brutal seven game series, and it gives them an edge. You know, that's a big part of the playoffs. You know.
Well, tonight, like I said, the Pacers are playing the Hawks. Right now, they're in the third quarter with a little more than 10 minutes left in the third quarter. Pacers are up 40-39. The Thunder just started probably 15 minutes ago or whatever, and the Grizzlies happen to be up on the Thunder right now. Quite naturally, they played the first two games in the higher seed is building. Now the lower seed gets a shot, I got to believe that if the Pacers come through the series, the coach is probably history. I don't know if you heard about the scuffle, supposedly, in practice that Evan Turner and Lance Stephenson of the Pacers had. Team that a lot of people have projected to possibly go to the NBA finals, much less the Eastern Conference finals, supposedly against the Miami Heat, are now down 44-40 against the Hawks. I got to believe that the coach is probably gone, and there could be a possibility that Lance Stephenson, which I think is a problem child on the team, may be gone also things don't turn well, if they don't move on and make a substantial run in the playoffs. Your thoughts?
You know, when I hear about these teams and guys not getting along like the Pacers, I think these teams might have some type of team psychiatrist or somebody like that. I'm not kidding.
I know you're not.
Think about it. These are very young guys. A lot of these guys are in their 20s. I mean, some are in their 30s, but it's still a young bunch of guys, big egos, a lot of money, and you think of what's at stake, maybe some type of, professional-type person, them having access to that might smooth things out. I mean, that was a big thing in the 90s was a lot of the popular rock bands were breaking up and changing members and whatever. It was a big deal. But then some of the bands used a therapist or whatever to kind of work out their differences because depending on who it is, when a band changes members, that's a big deal. That could set you back, especially if it's a guy who's maybe lead singer or lead guitar or he writes the songs. That guy leaves the band, you got a big problem. And these relationships are important enough, for some type of counseling. I'm serious. I think it could be a big benefit to some of these teams.
Yeah, but you don't you think that guys, most guys have big egos. These guys have been all put on a pedestal for a greater part of their basketball career. Type A personalities. not everyone gets along. Quite naturally, you will like it, but not everyone gets along on every team. It seems like something happened. Huge dysfunction just took place with this team, and now they're down 50-42 with 8:29 in the third quarter, which is not good. I see some changes. Believe it or not, I got to believe that Larry Bird and company realize this team is. You may have a lot of talent, but the personalities on these teams are just not gelling enough that they can stay with them next season. So the coach is probably gone if they don't make a great run, like I said, and at least one or two players are going to be history because of the chemistry and the dysfunction that's taking place now. And it seems like the Grizzlies are giving the Thunder a little headache. 22-15 in the first quarter. And let me bring in our esteemed other host from the District of Columbia. What's up, Black, my man? How you doing?
What's going on, man? What's going on? What's going on, Joker?
Hey, Black, how you doing?
And we're talking about the NBA playoffs,
the
Black.
The Redskins are the only undefeated team so far. I'm feeling very good.
Excuse me?
The Wiz kids are the only undefeated team so far, so I'm feeling very good.
No, what about the Miami Heat?
Well, no one talks about the Heat. We don't credit the Heat. That's an all-star mob put together by LeBron James. We're not talking about the Heat tonight.
Well, we are talking about the playoffs, and we were just talking about Indiana. Well, let's finish talking about Indiana, and then we can talk about your Wizards, because I do want to talk about them, because I mentioned them briefly a few minutes ago. What do you think about what's going on with the freaking Pacers, man? Right now they're down by 8 points almost halfway, not halfway, but quite halfway through the third quarter. What do you think about? What the heck's going on with the Pacers?
That's a situation that coach is supposed to rein in and not let happen as deep into the season. So I got to think the Vogel's going to be out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Win, lose, or draw, I think he's got to be out of there at the end of the season. You can't allow stuff like that to happen this late in the season.
So besides the coach, because more than likely they won't make a decent run. They may, but it doesn't look like they've changed their a pattern from late part of the season into the playoffs. And it looks like they may be out in a short run.
I don't exactly know what happened to my guy, my Georgetown faithful, and as far as Roy Hibbert, I mean, it's like the game took a total 360 turn. I don't know what's going on with Roy Hibbert.
Do you think it may be some type of injury undisclosed injury that's causing him to do what he had been doing for the majority of the season up until about a month or so ago?
I don't know if that's the injury. I don't know if he was the one that was catfishing Paul George. Who knows? I don't know what's going on with Roy, but it's not looking good.
Well, they're still down, and they're just struggling to stay with the Hawks. I mean, the Hawks are a pretty quick team, but they don't have the talent level, in my opinion, that they have with the Pacers, but the Pacers are so dysfunctional right now. Teams like the Hawks, who did it late in the season, are handling them, and it looks like it's going to go right down to the wire in the fourth quarter on whether it's 2-1 Pacers or 2-1 Hawks. Let's talk about a surprise team. Like I had said earlier, a surprise team that's playing, I think, tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, they are playing tomorrow. They're playing in Washington. Your Washington Wizards, who are 44-38 against the Chicago Bulls, who are 48-34. Everyone talked about Tom Thibodeau, his wondrous ways he did with the defensive stalwarts in Chicago and how Chicago is a gritty team. Well, the quickness and the speed of the Washington Wizards have, I would say, befuddled the Bulls, but has gotten the best of them. Talk to me, Black.
Yeah, Tibbs is in trouble, man. Tibbs, they have a very strong defensive team there in Chicago, but it's always been the knock on Chicago that they don't have any offense. And that offense, if they can't score 90 points and the game's in the 90s and 100s, they're not going to win. They got to find a way to try to create offense. They don't have any guys that can create off the dribble as far as just DJ Augustine maybe in one. The rest of those guys, you got to find spots. You got to move the ball, and that's hard to do. It's hard to do against a quick, young, hungry team featuring one all-star, John Wall, current all-star that should be one next year probably in Bradley Beal. You got two serviceable big men. You got nice forwards. I mean, it's a surprise to some, but not a surprise to many here in Washington.
Well, I was surprised the two games I saw highlights of that. Nene was getting the best of Joakim Noah, who was the Defensive Player of the Year. You think he's intimidated by him, or he's just physically too strong for Joakim Noah, or Joakim Noah, I should say.
Nene is a product of the Denver Nuggets team that went to the playoffs, so he's
right.
He's not afraid of Noah.
No, I'm talking about Noah being intimidated against Nene, because Nene, you could obviously Nene's pretty physical, and he's got I would say he's got the power, got more power than Joakim Noah, and you think Joakim Noah just has a hard time dealing with somebody like Nene.
I just think it's tough matchups for Nene, whether it's on. For Noah, whether it's on Nene or whether it's on our big man, Gortat. Even on the switches, I mean, both of those guys are long. Gortat isn't that strong, but Nene is strong. That's a hassle for Noah to get rebounds, to play the defensive anchor, and to run behind both of those guys up and down the court. That's a lot of work for Noah. And when you don't have guys that can put up points by themselves, unlike DJ Augustine, the only guy that they do have, it's going to be tough for Chicago.
All right. Well, I got somebody else from the DMV area that I want to bring in and see what his thoughts on Washington Wizards, since he's down at in that area. What's up, Mikhail? How you feeling, my man?
What's up, man? What's going on?
Hey, Mikhail.
What's going on?
Hey, Jeff. What's up, Black?
What's up,
hey,
man?
Hey, Black, were you down the stadium when I remain? I know you were.
Nah, I wasn't down to say anything, Mom.
Oh, man. What y'all rapping about?
Well, right now we're talking about the
World
the playoffs, the Washington
kid.
Wizards.
Oh, yeah. Everybody just doing a delayed, siced up move with the Wizards now. You know? I mean, and it's warranted. You know what I'm saying? It's warranted. Man, the Wizards are always breaking hearts, man. They've been breaking hearts for 35 years. I'm 40 years old, man. Probably about 10 years ago, I stopped. I just couldn't do it no more. But, you know, I think they're gonna do well against the Bulls. I don't think they're gonna sweep them. I think the Bulls are at least gonna pull out game four. I think they're gonna at least get one, but the litmus test is 100. If the Wizards score 100 points, the game is over.
Okay.
There was also I heard some talk about did the Wizards win or did the Bulls lose? Look, if the Wizards get 100, the Bulls got beat. The Wizards beat them. But if the Bulls don't get over 90 points and they still lose, they really lost that game. I mean, I don't know how you can – I don't even know how else you can look at it. It's just the Wizards, they coming up with this win or whatever, You know, they may save Ernie's job, but I don't think that should happen. I think they still need to go ahead and move from him. Because he ain't did nothing else. They ain't even been in the Eastern Conference Finals. And he's been with us, what, 10 years? He got to go.
Well, let me tell you this. Right now, let me just refresh this real quick to see if it gotten any worse or gotten any better. With about a little bit more than 4 minutes left in the third quarter, the Hawks are beating the Pacers by, now it's 8 points. Before it was 10. That ain't looking good, man. That's not looking good anyway. Wow. All right, let's move from the NBA. And you know what? Since you had talked about it on Sunday. But I want to talk about it again because I got two guys from the D.C. area. One of them probably didn't go. I don't know if he watched it on Showtime. But there were three boxing matches. And it was three different weight classes, middleweight, welterweight, and light heavyweight. The first one was Kid Chocolate against Konecki. I'm pretty sure one of you guys, if not both of you, whoever watched it, because I sure watched it. I have an opinion, but I want to get opinion from Macau because I think he watched all three fights. Macau, talk to me. Kid Chocolate against Konecki.
I missed those fights. You know what? I can't get excited for Bernard Hopman, for B Hop. I mean, I respect him and all, but he's 49, man, and I can't do it. Kid Chocolate, I don't know too much about, so that's why I missed that one. So maybe.
Well, what about the fight with Sean Porter and Magnanati?
Nah.
Did you happen to watch any of their fights?
No.
Oh, okay, Black. How about you? Did you watch any of these fights?
Well, let me tell you how my day and night went. I was supposed to went to the Armory, but I had complications and ended up having my daughter for the night, which was cool. No complaints. But I wasn't interested in watching the Peter Tien fight. I was interested in watching the Paulie Malignaggi and the Sean Porter fight, and Sean Porter destroyed Malignaggi. I hope that Malignaggi sticks to his plans to retire. There's no
exactly.
Need to box Malignaggi. Go back up in that booth where you're perfect for doing the boxing analyst. Please don't get back in that ring. That was three or four rounds of whooping from Sean Porter, who's an up-and-coming fighter in that weight class. The B-Hop fight, I watched the first round, and I had to check out, man. First round was definitely no action, no anything. Just a bunch of posing and walking around in circles. So I had to tune out after that.
Right.
But I heard it ended up being a good fight.
Yes, it did end up being a good fight. But the most entertaining fight, in my opinion, was the welterweight fight with Sean Porter and Paulie Malignaggi. I'm telling you. This is my opinion. Okay, when I watched that fight, when I saw the size of a welterweight with that much bulk and that much muscle going up against a guy like Malignaggi, it reminded me of Mike Tyson going up against somebody, and you can see the actual intimidation that the other fighter had because. The size of this welterweight was mind-boggling to me. This guy was pure muscle, and it was like I feared for the guy's life, Malignaggi, because the type of power punches that he was hitting him with looked like he was going to kill him. I don't know if you felt that, Black, but I mean the power in those punches.
He was eating a lot of levels
crazy.
A lot of levels eating that night. I mean, he was just too quick for Malignaggi and too powerful for Malignaggi. I mean, what's Sean Porter's, what, 24, 25 years old?
Right.
Alonzo has to be about 33, 34. He just wind it up, man. Just wind it up and call it a career.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Good. And I was actually surprised that Adrian Broner, during the Kian fight, when they took a break in the action, actually wanted Paulie to win that fight.
Yeah, you know, he didn't want he didn't want nothing to do with Sean Porter. I don't think too many people want anything to do with Sean Porter. He's got too much power, man. He's got too much power. He hits you and it's like hitting a cinder block hitting your jaw. That's what it looks like. I mean, I've never seen a welterweight with so much bulk like I saw on Sean Porter. That was crazy. I've never seen a welterweight like that.
And I see the Joker, and I see Makai didn't watch this fight. Please YouTube that fight. Sean Porter versus Paulo Malignaggi.
I'm going to check that out.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you.
Paulie, he don't got no power, but he damn sure a good technician in the ring.
Good technician went out the door when he got hit with one of those rights from Sean Porter. I'm telling you right now. All bets were off once he got hit with one of those.
It's a good fight. So if you get a chance, please YouTube it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to YouTube it right after we get off this joint.
All right. Now, I say the best for last, in my opinion, because as you guys know, the NFL released the 2014 season, schedule for the regular season. And right off the bat, there are some nice matchups going into week one with the Seattle Seahawks. Where are they at now? Hold on. I just saw it. Going up against the where the heck is it at? Oh, boy. What? Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. September 4th on Thursday. Green Bay visits Seattle at 8:30. First Thursday night game kicks off the regular season of the NFL season. And after that, coming down to going to Houston, the Washington Redskins are playing the Houston Texans. The New York Giants are going to go to Detroit to play the Detroit Lions. The Dallas Cowboys are hosting the San Francisco 49ers. Now I have a Giant fan on here. I have a Cowboy fan on here. I have a Washington Redskin fan, and quite naturally, I'm a Houston Texan fan. I'm going to go to the Giant fan first, week one, and then I'm going to go to the Cowboy fan next, the Redskin fan then, and then myself. Talk to me, Jeff, week one, going to Detroit.
Yeah, it's a Monday night doubleheader, and the Giants are kicking it off against the Lions. Lions got a new coach, and the Lions have a new head coach, and the Giants have a new offense, a new offensive coordinator, and Giants have been running the same offense for a long time, and this is a totally new system, and under the current collective bargaining agreement, they don't get as much time in the off season to work on a new offense, so I'm really hoping they don't get off to a slow start, because that's a kiss of death. And I mean, Eli's coming off a disappointing season. I mean, that's not all on him, but I'll tell you, I haven't analyzed the schedule. It's a lot to look over. I mean, recently the NFL has a lot more division games late in the season, which is I'm fine with, but they sometimes though they have divisional opponents playing each other like twice in the same month, and I don't like that. That's too soon,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I forget what it was. It was Giants were playing somebody
I assume it was a divisional opponent. I don't remember which one. And then I'm thinking to myself, hey, they just played those guys 3 weeks ago. That shouldn't be, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because it's a long season, and it's especially if you're missing important guys, then they can catch a break maybe and have two games without your star if you got somebody banged up. And I don't know. It's just I don't like it when teams play too close together. So wish they'd look into that.
Before I go to Black, Giants first games at Detroit, hosting Arizona. Hosting the Houston Texans, and then they go at Washington. That's the first four games of Giants. Not a really easy road right out the gate for the first four games. Black, your Dallas Cowboys are hosting the 49ers. And then from the 49ers, they go at the Tennessee Titans. Then they go at the Rams, the two road games back to back, and then they go to who do they play? Then New Orleans comes to play them. That's the first four games. Your thoughts, Dallas, your boys.
I won't be surprised if we are what our record is for the past 3 years, 2-2 in those four games right there.
Okay.
Wouldn't be surprised at all.
All right. Well, Mikal, you're Washington Redskins. You're Washington Redskins start the season off in Houston.
Yeah.
My Houston Texans are hosting you. That's your first game. Your second game after that, you host Jacksonville coming to visit the Redskins. And then the Redskins – go at the Philadelphia Eagles, and on I think this is probably a Thursday night. They play the New York Giants in at the Redskins. First four games: Giants, Rams, Texans, and the Eagles. Talk to me.
Giants, Rams, Texans, and Eagles. You know they could. They could very well slip them games. They could very well come out 2-2 in them games. But I tell you this, you know, looking at the Redskins' overall schedule, there's no reason for them not to be 9-7. I mean, just looking at it today, of course, you know, you got a lot of different coaches coming in and different players, you know, change the dynamic, but. If they do below average, then they'll hit that 9-7. If they do average, then they could do a 10-6. Because if you split the three division games, that's 3-3, and then you know they got the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Rams, and Arizona. You can count all them as losses right there. You know what I'm saying? That's seven. You know they can get them nine. They can get them nine, but, you know, I don't know. But that Texans game, it's going to be a toss-up. It's going to be a toss-up because you got a new coach, and I don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback for the Texans. And I have no idea what the Redskins' offense is going to look like. So it's going to be a toss-up game. But it'll be a defining one because if they come out, I mean, it shouldn't be too bad. Because, it'll be a lot of RG3 fans down there. And if y'all do what y'all supposed to do and pick up Johnny Manziel, it'll be a hell of a game.
That ain't happening. And there's talk that the Atlanta Falcons are hot in pursuit of that number one pick, possibly. And Thomas Dimitroff, who happens to be the GM in Atlanta, is a very aggressive guy, a.k.a. Julio Jones trade, and they've already supposedly had him he said he wasn't going to have to work out, but Jadeveon Clowney is supposedly going to be working out for a short workout with the Falcons. So don't be surprised come, and I hope this doesn't happen, be surprised that come May 8th, which is 2 weeks from today, that the first name call may be for, not for the Houston Texans, but for the Atlanta Falcons. With that being said, we're into overtime, but we're getting the hell out of here. I want to go around the table to give me your final thoughts before we walk away from the mic. Go to Black, then Macau, then Jeff, and then myself.
As much as I would like to call for the broom, I'm not too proud of the broom be brought out, but let's go with it.
Okay.
I'm gonna say go with this. Don't take out the broom, and please keep your Kleenex, because them Wizards will break your heart sooner or later. They will break your heart.
Mute this man. Mute this man now, please. Mute him.
Oh man, that's not. But no, hey Black, that's, I'm not hating on him. I'm just tired of being. I was tired of getting my heart broke, so I'm saying I've been a Wizards. I used to be a Wizards fan a long time ago with Rex Stackman, Tom Gugliotta, Jeff Malone. Come on, man.
The key word in that whole phrase you just brought up was used to be. We don't deal with used to be.
Right. Used to be because I got tired of getting my heart broke, man. Got tired of it.
All right, Jeff, talk to me. Talk to me.
It was this day 10 years ago. The Giants made a little trade: Philip Rivers and some draft picks for Eli Manning. I think it's worked out pretty well for both teams, but both these guys are still playing, and Rivers doesn't have any rings. And also in that same draft class was Roethlisberger, so those guys are always going to be connected. I like Rivers, but, hasn't had the Super Bowl opportunities that Eli was able to take advantage of. And the draft is coming up, and it's weird. Teams got a couple more weeks now to do their homework, but also they got a lot less time to work on contracts, so I hope there's not a lot of holdouts. Because that's usually the kiss of death for a rookie.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something. You're saying that Roethlisberger, Rivers, and Eli Manning were in the same draft class, right, Jeff?
Correct.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, you probably know this answer anyway. They said that the greatest draft class for quarterbacks was in 1983. Okay. Has the most rings out of the class of 1983 and the draft class that you named with Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger?
Okay. Eli's got two. Ben's got two, but he also lost the Super Bowl. And you might get picky the first Super Bowl. Ben, they won it despite of Ben. That 83 group, I'm trying to think, Marino lost the Super Bowl. Kelly was 0-4. Elway, he lost three, but he won two. So
right,
it's Elway's got the most from that class.
So the point I'm making here is the greatest draft class, okay, in quarterbacks doesn't have the amount of Super Bowl rings as the class of Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, and Eli Manning.
Yeah.
Just think about that. Okay. I mean, they have quite a few quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Fame, but only one of those quarterbacks in that 83 class has two rings. The others have gone to the Super Bowl, but haven't won them. Only but one. With that being said, it's 8:51 in the fourth quarter. The Hawks are beating the Pacers 75-64 with 3:59 in the second quarter. The Grizzlies are beating the Thunder 40-28.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in the NBA, and some of them aren't good, especially for the Pacers. With that being said, I don't know. I've been preaching this for the longest ever since I've been watching this series, and I think McCown has jumped on board. But the season 4 of the Game of Thrones, the past episode was episode 3. Episode 4 is going to be on Sunday at 9 o'clock. I suggest
the bomb, man.
Excuse me? I suggest you start watching it. It's 6.6 million viewers watched last week's show. 6.6 million viewers watched last week's show. I've been preaching this for the longest. I should be a sponsor for them, whatever, because this is one of the best shows on TV. I'm telling you, you watch this show, you'll get hooked. I've been talking to my sister, my older sister, about it. She finally started watching it, and she's hooked. She's hooked on watching this show because it's so good. And the storyline and plot is all over the place with different characters from one show to the next.
Jerry.
Yes.
Jerry, they got midgets in this show. They got dragons, midgets. And they got, zombies in this joint. Oh,
yep.
My God. And they look, and they got a pimp. How can you not watch this show? How can you not?
Yes, I'm telling you. I've been preaching it for years. It's not. I'm only preaching to the choir now because it's a very popular show. And it's only getting better. So,
hey Jerry, that dude is like that slow. I like little finger.
Yep.
Like.
All right. With that being said, I've said all I can say. I want to thank you guys for joining me tonight. Have a good week. Enjoy the NBA playoffs if you watch them. Enjoy your rest of your week until next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be here, Jeff will be here, Black will be here, and even McCown may jump in and add to the conversation. We're the FSP crew, and as always, when I get to this point, I say we're out.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore, Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy, sports, and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy, sports, and politics crew. Yeah, yeah, come on. Fantasy, sports, and politics crew.